I have some questions for you because you brought up the supplement brand. We obviously can't name them, but you said some pretty crazy numbers.
Talk like category of ranges. Right. Basically, several millions in turnover. You keep it pretty vague. Several millions in turnover, you know, plus in turnover, and then 50% net profit margins, doing insane numbers, really high a customer return in terms of retention and repeat purchases, AOV, insane unit economics. Does
$500
amazing.
AOV. This is a supplement brand. Do they sell direct to consumer? Is that all like most of their revenue?
All online.
And they do $500, which is absurd. Insane profit margins. And how do they mostly acquire customers? What do they do to mostly get their new customers coming in?
It's mainly, you'd be very surprised. So this is a bit of an eye opener in the sense where if you get a really great product, I think that you just have to do a little bit less heavy lifting. So you'd be surprised. Their only acquisition channel at the most part is Meta. In fact, email marketing is so underutilized. It's actually pretty insane. They do 2 emails a month because they don't want to annoy their customers. So there is so much to squeeze out of this. If they want to go ham even more in terms of ad spend, it's less than 6 figures a month in terms of ad spend as well. So I think in the grand scheme of things, when I look at like a lot of other brands in similar ranges of turnover, the ad spends are usually way higher. You know what I mean? In order to generate 2 mil in turnover, some brands are spending upwards of like $500 to $1 million a year in ad spend. It's pretty up there in terms of marketing costs. But this brand, honestly, an actual unicorn, but the unit economics are insane, especially from like the profitability perspective.
That's like highlights the importance of having good economics before you go ham scaling. Obviously, he is in a place, or she, that whether they can just scale ridiculously aggressive because they have the margins to do that. But we have a brand in our portfolio of brands that's able to spend profitably up to about a 1.4 ROAS, meaning like compared to how much they spend and how much new customer revenue, they can do it at about a 1.4 ratio, which is like a lot of brands can't do less than 3, for instance, if their margins are like 50%. But this one has such good margins that they're able to do that. And it's such an advantage because they can just spend significantly more than anyone else. So yeah, unit economic can literally be a competitive advantage if you're in like a really competitive industry, which like supplements is a hugely competitive industry. That makes a lot of sense to have that advantage. And you said that product is the other advantage for them. Was it a brand new product? Like, was it never seen before, or was it something that was just rebranded to a specific market? How was the product so special?
It actually is a new product out in the market, but basically the way that I talk about the process of how we kind of did it, and I don't know if I'll actually talk about the actual product itself because I feel like I don't
know
if it's
secret,
confidential.
But tell us, like, did he scratch his own itch? Did he like just find like how?
Of course. So this guy basically has been working in pharmaceutical industry for all his life, and he saw that there was a gap in the market, and he saw that other less intelligent people were selling less high quality products, and he knew that they weren't working on some level because basically he, with his knowledge of the industry, knew that particular types of supplements would only give you the effects with a high enough dosage. But the problem was with a lot of the stuff that was being sold on the market didn't have the correct dosages. So it's almost like, you know, like creatine as an example, you would need like whatever milligrams to get that initial kick. But a lot of the competitors were only giving like 10 milligrams or something, which we would only get a small kick, and they were still marketing it like crazy. He saw the gap in the market to basically say, look, I'm just going to sell the exact same thing, but with a high enough dosage that you actually feel something from it. And at first he 40K worth of product and was just like, all right, I'm just going to go try and sell it with some product that was like, okay. And he did it. Right, and he sold it. But then after feedback from the customers, he realized there were like other products that were much better and more suited to his client base. And when he found that product market fit, and he went through a lot of different iterations of selling a different product that he thought was useful, but that gap in the market, that problem of having a good supplement with the right dosages to then have a high quality experience for the customer, he realized that was the problem. And then through his customer feedback, he realized what people were actually experiencing in terms of their pain points and everything. And then he released a brand new product based on that knowledge, hit product market fit, and just scaled to the moon. And because of this product, especially in the supplement space, it's like very, very lifetime value, because once you find it, you want to keep buying it every single month or every 2 months or whatever it is when you run out. So yeah, amazing brand and business case. And I think that it all comes down to having the product market fit, but also playing in the right industry, because I feel like this industry in particular, when you find the right product, a gold mine, because people will just keep coming back. You don't even need to like remind them. They'll just come back for more anyway.
Supplements. Can I guess at least the problem it solves?
Oh, 100%.
Like, is it towards like, I'm assuming because the biggest ones are sleep or like energy. What else is that? Nootropics, so like brain power. One of those industries or like focus? Is it
100%. Yeah. So I'll even talk about the timeline. Like, the individual basically came out with like, you know, all of these different products and focusing on all these different problems. It's either one of the three or four, right? It's sleep, it's like brain, and then brain focus and all these different things. And he figured out that like, oh, some of these hit better than others. He found probably like a problem that was way more lucrative and way more big of a problem that people would be willing to pay more for. And in that case, it wasn't necessarily sleep. I think it was more so overall just performance and like anti-aging and like that type of thing. Like, you know, like, yeah. So it was kind of like around that problem.
Interesting. It's such a good example when, you know, because a lot of brands will be less, oh, my product solves all these problems. It does all these things. And then the answer back is, well, find the one that resonates with the most amount of people and just double down on that. And that example that you just shared is someone finding a product that probably does a lot more than what he's focusing on, but he just realized most people resonated with that one thing. So he just doubled down, and that's what he literally just branded just rebranded around that main core message, which is really, really interesting. I want to bring something up that perfectly sort of segues from that, which is a concept I'm coining now is creative product fit. And basically what it is, I think every brand has a perfect form of creative that they can use to scale to $1 million, at least to seven figures. Beyond that, maybe they need to start thinking of other concepts, but I think most brands could at least be doing 80 to 100K per month, pushing out one concept. And for that matter, probably for service as well. And I noticed that because we've had a few brands now that have had like home run ads, meaning ads that have just continually worked. Like you would just keep launching that same concept and it would constantly work. Like it was no longer a matter of success of ads. And it would be because you just have this concept that works really well demonstrating their product. We had one brand that out of all these professional videos we paid for, and I think they paid like $5,000 for one particular series of videos, right? The one that really worked was this crappy iPhone video of like, it was a TikTok unedited of the founder just sharing the latest products in like a box. And it was really raw. It was unedited. There was no music. There was mistakes in it, but it like absolutely crushed. And so we realized that like founder level content for them, like this family and business was that they've done over like $500,000 in a month. Like they completely crushed. And another one was like this brand that was like a hobbyist brand, which we're kind of talking about. And it was just like a basic, again, like edit demonstration video that kind of showed A to Z of their product being used to create. Like it was a product for like tables, etc. Like it was some sort of woodwork products. And so I think that every brand has their own version of a champion creative or creative market, creative product fit is what I said, that every business could potentially find. And it's all they should be focusing on if they're trying to get to seven figures is, or like consistently 100K per month, is to find that one creative model. And I only think you need one. I don't know if you've had experience with that or any thoughts on that, but that's been my recent observation last week.
Yeah, dude, I love that. And I would actually agree, because the thing about you're saying is every brand is somewhat different and they need to find a specific angle that works for them. But once they find it, they can really amplify it through way more spend or advertising, whatever it is, and just use that as the main lever to grow. And I think I've seen so many instances of that, not only just like in other brands, also ourselves, in that like your market positioning is actually really important. And I know I don't want to get like too strategic and airy-fairy, but you know, every single brand has their place in the marketplace, right? Are you the best and the best in quality? Are you kind of more like small family owned? Are you like a one person band? Or are you like this massive competitor? Like, are you the big industry? You're the best of the best. You're crushing the little mom and pop shops. You know what I mean? So I think every single brand, because of their positioning, will have a way better chance of succeeding with different types of angles. Like as an example, that whole founder led creative that, you know, we're a family run business and like founder led creatives from Coca-Cola, who's a multi-billion dollar company, it wouldn't land because like nobody in the heartstrings of people and support local business. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm just an average person trying to make it. Please support me. This is just, you know, like here it is. You can utilize that because it matches with your positioning. So because of that whole, I've seen it so many times where different brands will basically look at the TikTok ads library or Meta ads library and look at at the brands in that they're competing against and see like the ads that are running for the longest. They'd be like, okay, UGC videos with this particular angle is working for them. I'm going to literally copy it and do it for myself. And then they do it and it flops. And the only narrative or reason that I can come up with is that it's not the creative that's the issue. It's just that your positioning in comparison to that creative doesn't work because for you and your business, it doesn't resonate with your audience. So yeah, I think that's kind of like my interpretation of it, but that's why I agree with basically what you're saying.
I think like having your positioning is super important, but that was a prerequisite to knowing even what creatives you should be doing. But now that you have, once you kind of know what works, like you're already doing a pretty decent amount of revenue by this point to have an understanding of what, like, who you care about. But then all you have to do is get creative about how can I now demonstrate that exact point? I don't know if you have your sample on TikTok that does the drops. Like you put in your mouth and then it like opens up your sinuses and stuff. And then like it makes you really minty. And then it causes like a big effect. You try it and then you really feel it.
But no. Their whole TikTok strategy Listerine or something or what?
It's not Listerine. It's like a D2C brand that blew up on TikTok. I can't remember what it's called. Like, it's sort of weightlifting, sort of workout realm of targeting.
But they went for a really
specific audience. And the whole concept, like their version of their concept was, well, we really need to activate that sense of like feeling like and energized. They do it and they get like random people, whether they're paid actors or customers, who knows, but they get them to do it. I'm like, all right, I'll try it. And they do it and they go, whoa. And they just, this crazy reaction of like that. They just had a big kick of pre-workout. Like, that's what they react. And they have like millions of views. They average like a couple hundred K views. And some of them have like tens of millions. And that's a perfect example of like their main demonstration is what? Their main angle is opening your sinuses, being able to breathe better, feeling more energized to communicate that rather than doing like a UGC testimonial. I just tried this product and I feel amazing. Showing the senses through a reaction. And that's their example. And all they have to do now to get to eight figures, which they probably already are at, is just scale that concept, do more of it at bigger scales with more people. And so I think most brands just need to simplify down to one concept. What's like my one concept that's going to showcase my angle, my problem, or my identity? That's been something that's been interesting to see, and more brands should have a think about.
Of a business that follows that exact formula in the sense where they found one kind of angle that resonates the most with the audience and they just completely hammer it. Obviously, they change it up, but there's a brand called Lucent Globe. They essentially sell paper, like dishwashing, I guess, products where instead of using like dishwashing tablets where it's like chemicals and everything like that, it's basically just like dishwashing sheet and like you can like rip it in half and it's just like way better for the environment. But the founders are actually twins and they were based on the Gold Coast. And their entire narrative and story is that they went traveling around the world and they realized that the amount of trash that was out there. And because of that, they made their entire mission to save the world in terms of like decreasing pollution and stuff like that. And through that whole narrative, all of their ads include the fact that, hey, we are two brothers, we're twins. We went across the world and we saw how much pollution there was. So we made it our life's mission to decrease pollution. That's why you need to support us. So every single ad literally has a different hook, but it's all the same like middle content of, we're two brothers, we're Lucent Globe, we've been around the world, we're trying to decrease pollution, save the planet, stop supporting these big companies, support us. But they might like chop and change the hook where instead of, you know what I mean, like ripping the sheet in half, they might like jump from a roof or something or like throw a plate on the ground. Like they'll change up the hook, but the body of the ad is always the same. So again, that's a really great example of exactly what you mentioned. They found one angle that worked really well and now they're just recycling that exact same angle and scaling ads with that, and that's working for them. So yeah, that's a pretty specific example of that. Very
cool that I learned last week as well, speaking to someone. Is again a bit more detailed, right? More on the e-commerce side. And so like one big problem brands have is getting customers to come back a second time. Like that's any attention person's nightmare, like, or keeps them up and up. Our media buyers, it's your ads not working and making, losing money. And for them, it's getting people to buy a second time. And the thing that someone said, and it was a brilliant strategy that I wrote down. And what it was, every Tuesday and Thursday, or Tuesday and Friday, whatever it was, they would send out an email to their whole list and say, this particular product is on sale for $10. So like everything would usually be $50 or $60, but every once a week or twice a week, they make a product $10. And they probably lose margin on that or get them, probably make little to no money on that sale, right? But when you think about it, it's actually quite a brilliant strategy. Because for one, it massively improves the open rate of your emails because people don't want to miss out on that special $10 offer. And two, it gets all the people in the emails, which, you know, 89 of them have only ever bought once because that's the ratio of people, right? It gets so many more people to become a second customer. And from that, the likelihood of them coming in to be a third and fourth customer is like three, fourfold. And I was just like, such a simple strategy that anyone can do where you just once a week or once a fortnight, just send out an email at cost pricing and just promote heavily one particular variant and just train your email list to do that. And I was like, that is real. So that was a cool trick. I don't know. Have you ever heard anything like that? Have you seen any brands do that before?
Yeah, that's a really interesting strategy. I haven't seen anyone do that particular thing, but I have seen a lot of cases where the strategy is basically customer service, right? Like, I don't think you need to overthink the tactics of it. You just need to think, how can I give my customers the best experience possible? And it's funny because in a lot of e-com, you kind of miss that experience because it's all online, where let's just take it from like a retailer perspective, or like, let's just say services businesses like you and I, you miss everything. Like how you talk to your clients, how they interact with your team, your products and the services. Anytime we want to add more value, it's a game of talking to the client and asking them, hey, how can I add more value? Like for us as an agency or any services business, it's like, hey, I just did this thing for you. Can you tell me what I did well and what I didn't do well? And like, is there anything else I can help you with? Oh, you've got this other problem. Hey, I can also help you with this. And it's about just getting that feedback, understanding their problems, and then providing the solution. Whereas a lot of the times, e-com businesses don't do that a lot. So a few brands that I've noticed and seen, steroids. So I've got this one founder who literally every single person that is on their website that abandons cart or like puts products into the checkout and then like doesn't buy, but they have like the email address and you can kind of see it. He literally emails them from his own personal email address or sort of company email address. And he's like, hey, I'm the founder of X company. I saw you didn't buy X, Y, and Z. Please know why. Like, is there any problems? And this isn't an automated email. It's literally a one-on-one email that he will literally send to every single customer. And he has thousands of people that abandon the cart, and he takes the time out to do that. So his strategy is just doubling down on customer experience and making sure that he understands the problems, and then he can actually use that information to then like adjust the FAQs or, you know, the issues and the checkout experience. Like he can actually iterate on that. But he also, like, I think it adds this level of personalization and care that then you build a bit of loyalty and you're like, look, you know, I abandoned the cart, but I'm definitely going to keep coming back to this business and repeating my purchase because this guy cares. You know what I mean? So I think that customer experience is the strategy, I think.
Unscalable stuff. Definitely don't see any brands do that. Like I don't, my entire life of someone that's actually contacts customers. And it makes so much sense to do that. I listen to that and think straight away, though, I'd probably pump that out to a VA to do, because you could get a VA to just, no, but like seriously, you could get a VA to send out an email directly from your Gmail. And if you wanted to like see the customer comments because you want to be involved in the brand, do that. But like just get it through a VA. Because like you could document it on a spreadsheet, you know, or something, and like look at, like you don't really need to see every single response. You just need to see the trends of what you constantly see so you can get your finger in the pulse on front end, you know, customer complaints. So I think it's brilliant. I actually really, most brands would benefit from doing that. And like all you would need to do is just set up a basic process for managing.
You know, me thinking about how can you 10X the experience and separate every other brand? Like you say, it's the unscalable thing. And now you could go down the route of doing it yourself. And then once you figure out the process, offer it to a VA. But I think that it just what comes to my mind is two things. It's like one, handwritten letters to every single person that you're sending products to. And I think a lot of in very small e-com businesses when they first start out, obviously it becomes unscalable and then they stop doing it. But what we're seeing a lot of, you know, first time e-com founders do is they write a letter to every single person that has bought something from them and they'll send it out. And it feels so special opening that box and seeing a handwritten letter from the founder. And then the second thing is obviously an email from the founder themselves asking for feedback. Hey, I'm the founder. I just wanted to know, are you free for a chat? I would love to hear about your experience, learn more about it. We're trying to build something bigger, add more value to you. And like you can literally outsource those two things to a VA or somebody. And nobody would know, obviously, but you know, the end user experience is immaculate because you're like, wow, this founder cares so much about A, $30 purchase that is so small, like think about the attention to detail and the care involved. Even if they don't come back, at least they will give a positive experience and become an advocate for your brand and tell other people about your brand. And I think that that whole like flywheel will just compound over time.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with that. Having amazing customer experience is differentiates you. There's like letter writing services out there to do that exact service you're saying. So a lot of it still can be automated, but like there's definitely things that you can do that are unscalable, such as a video from the founder, like a little face cam video or photos of your package, like things like that. Most brands don't do, like the brands still don't do. So it's, and like, it's the way to differentiate yourself if you're a brand new startup with little capital and your advantage. So I 100% agree. That's a like requirement. It's just laziness. It's like not being lazy and actually putting in fit on all those unscalable things. Way to go. But I love that from that brand.
Thing I did want to kind of add a little bit onto this topic. I think that one thing that I've found is, especially in e-com, it's less seen in service, because in service-based businesses, you realize that your unique selling proposition or the better value you give is service. It's the experience, right? It's the basics better. Like how fast can I respond? How good is the quality of my work? All these little things, right? It's the basic things. Whereas in e-com, all the founders think about, for the most part, I would say like 60 to 70% of the time, is how can I get a better ROAS? How can I acquire more users? How can I marketing and acquisition based and less fulfillment based? Whereas when you elevate your brand and get it to that, you know, like 7 to 8 figure territory, it's a lot of the same thing, but executed at a way higher velocity or a better quality. So it's like, you don't need to actually change anything. You just need to up your game in terms of the value you're providing and the customer experience. So worry less about your ROAS and your ads. Obviously that's important. And maybe you can get an agency or your internal team member to do that for you. But like, worry about the customer way more than your ads. Because if you think about it, if you can get to the stage where you've won over a client or a customer and they will come back indefinitely forever without you even having to convince them, you've won. It's the same, you know, example as the client I was talking about that has that supplement brand. They spend less than 6 figures a month on ads and their AOV is like $500 and they've got like every, you know what I mean? Like insane retention indefinitely. I think that product, the customer experience matters so much.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll probably have to end it on there, Jason, just because I've got all that. I need to go somewhere right now. That was really good. I'll send it across and everything and added a note, put it into, create it into a podcast. So I'll help sort that out.
Cool. All right. And, let's collaborate on that. Let me know if you need any help. But yeah, keen to
see. I need help.
Let's see how it goes. I think it's good.
So. Sounds good. Brilliant.
Awesome, all right, man. I'll let you go.
I'll speak to you next week. See you, mate. See you.